The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. It must be so strange. When I spoke to my son yesterday in Israel, he was saying COVID isn't a thing anymore. And you know, you really listen to us and you hear what's going on. That's got to be so odd.
I was just sitting back yesterday and thinking about exactly this point, that really here it is not a thing. And that I can't understand why people don't look at Israel and say, that is an example of where we want to be. And in order to get there, you've got to vaccinate. That is clearly the answer. We've had, you know, we went through our three waves very, very quickly indeed. We had a lot of issues. And since the vaccination program has been rolled out, there can be absolutely no doubt that it has changed our world entirely. And if we are not a good example to the world of how to deal with things, then there is no good example. It really is like that. So I understand people's reluctance to be vaccinated. I get all of that. But seriously, we are a great clinical study of how to overcome this issue. I mentioned to you the other day that I think by the end of next week or middle of next week, we're going to be doing away with mask wearing at all. And everything is really open, you know, sports events and concerts and, you know, whatever we haven't been doing up until now, everything is really open. I was hearing, I listened into an interesting discussion, someone who went to a wedding recently, and he said, you know, after the chuppah, it's the usual family and friends coming along to wish the bride and groom mazal tov. He said, and then all of a sudden he got this nervous feeling about how germs get passed on one to the other, and you know, we've suddenly become so aware of this. Touch one person, then touch another person, then kiss so and so, then hug so and so, and how the whole thing gets spread around. That, you know, we've got into a different state of mind about how things work. But you know,
do people, Anthony, do people shake hands yet?
People have sort of started to shake hands again. Yes,
because it's because Israel is a very,
about it, I have to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, Israel's very, it's a very physical, demonstrative, emotional, environment, externally emotionally environment. So it must have been quite difficult until now. So I'm just interested if you go to a meeting or in shul on a Shabbat, if people are shaking hands or most are still reluctant to do that.
I'm still doing the fist bump, which I think when people put their hand out to you, and they're not really quite sure what to do, I just close my hand and they respond accordingly. The elbow thing is, I think, a little, I don't know, I don't particularly like it. I think that the fist bump is nice because if they wanted to shake your hand and they can see your reluctance, they can just close their fist and respond accordingly. So I quite like that. But people I've noticed have definitely begun shaking hands again. And, you know, shaking hands in Israel is like is the thin end of the wedge. People like to hug, you know, physically. And they haven't seen somebody for a week. They need a hug, you know.
Right,
you haven't been, you took 2 days off work. People want to hug you.
My son said that. He said it was incredible because when he went back into the office, everyone said, please be, and this was before everybody was fully vaccinated. He said no one could help it. Everybody was just hugging anyway.
Absolutely. It just comes so naturally. And just as well that we are vaccinated because obviously, people are back to doing that and are able to do it. And there's been quite a lot of speculation about what we're going to be doing about the teenagers, because on the one hand, we now understand that the vaccine has been approved for the 12 to 15-year-olds. And in fact, there was an announcement that they would begin rolling out the vaccine to that age group starting from next week. Now there's been some further discussions about whether it's really necessary. Have we reached herd immunity to the point that we don't really even need to vaccinate that age group? Because really, I mean, the numbers have gone down so dramatically. I think there were something like less than 500 active cases of COVID the last time I saw, which for us is a very, very low number. And so is there really the need to vaccinate this age group? Because what we've seen is, in spite of them not being vaccinated, we've really managed to get control over this. There is some talk about giving them one vaccine instead of two. There is talk about allowing parents to decide whether they want their children to be vaccinated or not. But there doesn't seem to be the same urgency now about getting that age group vaccinated that there was perhaps a few weeks, months ago.
Charles says, I know of somebody who went to Israel last week, thought they could he could get vaccinated, but couldn't find anybody to do it. Are they still are sites still open and active?
So very difficult. In truth, it is not that easy to find a place to get vaccinated. There are some dotted around the country. You have to really make an effort. You have to go places. They're not necessarily very local. Once upon a time, you know, every town and city, every place had a vaccination center. Now that's not the case. I know that if I would want to be vaccinated now, I would not be able to be vaccinated in the city where I live. I'd probably have to go and find a special clinic somewhere in Tel Aviv, make an appointment. It would be quite an effort. It's not that simple.
Indeed. All right. Let's move on to subjects political. What is going on with the negotiations, and where's Naftali Bennett in all of this?
So he's really been backwards and forwards, and we had a brief discussion about it yesterday. You felt that, you know, he'd done well over the period of the war. Other people were not so sure. He announced that he didn't really want to be in the change government during the period of the Gaza operation. And now that all seems to have changed. He's come out all guns blazing against the Likud, against some of the people within the Likud bloc who have been quite critical of him. Apparently the offer was made for him to come and join the Likud bloc, but to leave his partner Ayelet Shaked behind. Lots and lots of speculation, but the facts on the ground are that Yair Lapid currently has the mandate. He has quietly, really quietly, in the background, been signing coalition agreements with his coalition partners. So we understand that he's reached an agreement with the bloc from Avigdor Lieberman group, that he's reached an agreement also with the Meretz bloc. They've allocated cabinet positions to each of those two parties. It's all been very, very quietly done. No negotiations through the press, no backwards and forwards shooting at each other in public. It's just an announcement has been made that Yair Lapid and Avigdor Lieberman have reached agreement on a coalition participation for that particular party within the group. So I respect that style of negotiation, that it's not being done very publicly, that it's not dragging people's names through the mud. I'm sure that those negotiations are not any easier than other negotiations that we've seen, which have been done in public and have used the press in order to try and establish negotiating positions, which I think is a less desirable way to achieve these things. So he seems to slowly but surely be stitching together his coalition. I think his strategy is going to be to leave Naftali Bennett until last, and then to simply come to him and say, right, we have the coalition stitched together. You are the only piece that's missing from this. You either sign here and we form a government, or you don't, and we don't. I think that that's the strategy that Yair Lapid seems to be following right now, to try and get all the other pieces in place and then present it as take it or leave it, a kind of a fait accompli almost style. And it seems as if, though, Naftali Bennett, at least from yesterday's press, is quite inclined, or more inclined, to join the Yair Lapid grouping than he is currently inclined to join the Netanyahu grouping. And of course, the Netanyahu style is entirely opposite. It's all done publicly. It's all done through the press. It's all done, you know, dragging people, criticizing people, praising people, all being done very, very publicly indeed. So there's a real contrast between the two styles that we see going on at the moment.
All right. Let's hope that at least it'll be resolved one way or another. We can only hope.
Without another election.
Let's just talk Hezbollah. Hezbollah chief Hassan Nasrallah has made and released a recorded video speech. Tell us about this.
So this was released the day before yesterday. What we do know about Hassan Nasrallah is that he doesn't do any live broadcasts. He's still very, very nervous for his own well-being. He stays underground. He keeps a very, very low profile physically because he's afraid that Israel might well attack him. And afraid he may be, because I think that Israel's tentacles do reach out that far and could potentially reach him if they need to. What was noticeable, I mean, obviously, the subject matter of the Nasrallah speech was very critical of Israel and also reflected on the recent Gaza operation, Operation Guardian of the Walls, of course, threatening Israel as he usually likes to do. And, you know, the usual rhetoric that we would expect from Hassan Nasrallah. The issue is that he really did not look well. And that really has occupied people more than the subject matter, which is really just the same rhetoric. Nothing really new from Nasrallah. But he really physically didn't look well. And at times during his address, he was really coughing. And so this has led people to speculate that he may have COVID, that he may even be more unwell than that, that he may, there was some speculation that he might even be unwell with cancer. He just did not look well, and all the coughing, you know, fits that he had during the course of his address really gave people some food for thought. Now, as I say, he doesn't do a live broadcast, and so if after that his physical situation had actually improved, then one would have been inclined to think that they would have perhaps re-recorded it and shown him in a better light. But they didn't do that. So one has to assume that either he stayed the same in the period following the recording or potentially got even worse. And so there is a lot of talk now about whether he might be unwell with COVID, to what extent there might be medical attention that can be given to him in Lebanon, wherever he's hiding. So a lot of speculation, and it's ironic that this speech, which was really filled with the usual anti-Israel hate rhetoric that we expect from him, has really got people to look at him in an entirely different light and wonder about his state of health.
That is so interesting, because I would imagine they would have been concerned about showing some weakness here and vulnerability.
I agree, and they generally don't like to do that. They generally like to show, you know, ranting, raving, very, very strong, fist waving, you know, that kind of thing. This really wasn't the case on this occasion.
Yeah, very, very interesting. The towns and cities with mixed Arab and Jewish inhabitants remain very tense following the recent outbreak of violence between the two groups. Give us an update on the situation.
So fortunately, things have calmed down a little, and the places that really came under most significant violent issues are places like Lod, of course, the city of Jerusalem, which has quite significant mixed population, also Haifa, where Arab citizens came out, and groups of Jewish youths as well came out protesting. There was a massive protest in Netanya as well, where groups of Jewish youths were marching down the road with anti-Arab rhetoric. We didn't see necessarily clashes in Netanya. And interestingly, we saw personal intervention by the Netanya mayoress, who, you know, got people more to sing positive songs while they were doing their chants. Rather, she managed to somehow sway the opinion towards a more positive end. But this whole uprising of clashes between Jews and Arabs in Israeli towns and cities is really a subject for quite significant discussion and reflection, because it's a very, very worrying development. We do know that Hamas was instrumental, using social media and using other ways, to rile up the fervor, to rile up the anger, to get the Arab population of Israeli towns and cities to be more active, to be even violent against their Jewish neighbors and Jewish residents. And traditionally, there's been a relatively peaceful situation that exists in towns and cities like Lod or like Haifa, or even in Jerusalem, where we've got this ongoing conflict of the east versus the west side of Jerusalem. But as a general rule on any average day. People coexist with each other. They go and buy things from each other's shops, and they manage to mingle around without getting involved in too much, too many issues. And so the question is, you know, how does this happen? Why did it happen? And is there a change that we feel from within the Arab population, the Arab citizens of the state of Israel, about their existence in the Jewish state? Now, what's interesting about the Gaza operation and the whole anti-Semitic fervor that we felt not only outside of Israel, but indeed within Israel to some degree, is that it's also given rise to quite a number of Arab voices that have become public, that have come out and said, guys, whatever the Hamas machine is publicizing is not true. This is really the truth from where I'm sitting as an Arab citizen of the state of Israel. What you're saying is incorrect. What you're saying is loaded with an agenda which you're trying to progress, which reflects untruths. So there have been quite a number of these Arab voices that have been heard over the past while, which I think is very, very welcome. And for people who want to look for them, I suggest you go out and really search, because there are some very, very interesting Arab voices that have made themselves heard over the last few weeks, although it's unfortunately been drowned out to a large degree by the anti-Semitic chants that we've been hearing through the press. So a worrying development, not sure where it's going to go, but it's certainly something that's going to have to be kept a careful eye on.
And that's where we leave it. Anthony Rach, I hope you have a fantastic weekend, a peaceful weekend. We will catch you on a Monday morning.